السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين، حبيب إله العالمين أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المنتجبين. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إنما الصدقات للفقراء والمساكين والعاملين عليها والمؤلفة قلوبهم وفي الرقاب والغارمين وفي سبيل الله وابن السبيل، فريضة من الله، والله عليم حكيم. صدق الله العلي العظيم. وصلوا على محمد وآل محمد. Chapter number 9, Surah At-Tawbah, describes a series of events which takes place during the latter part of the life of the Prophet, specifically with the events which take place before, during, and after the conquest of Mecca, which is referred to as Al-Fath. And there's a separate chapter in the Quran which goes by this name, Surah Al-Fath, where Allah tells the Prophet, that begins the chapter by telling the Prophet that we have bestowed upon you, or we have granted you, a great victory. Inna fatahna laka fathan mubina. There's also another chapter in the Quran which also describes the state of people when they see the victory of the Muslims. And that is Surah Al-Nasr, إذا جاء نصر الله والفتح. Also towards the end of the Quran. But a longer chapter is chapter number 9, Surah At-Tawbah, which we've mentioned a number of times. And the verse which I just read describes categories of people that are deserving of the sadaqah, sadaqat, the charity. Now, there are different descriptions to this type of charity in the Quran. We have different types of charity. So we have one type of sadaqah, one type of charity is zakatul fitrah, which we pay on the day of Eid, at the end, Eid al-Fitr, at the end of the month of Ramadan. And this is paid by the head of the household, and the amount is designated. And it is to be paid to those who are poor. This is one type of sadaqah. This is one type of zakat, one type of charity which is given. In other cases, and especially in the Quran, types which are not applied today as much, are those which concern the spoils of war. When there is battle between Muslims and non-Muslims, and when there is spoils of war, as was very frequent during the life of the Prophet, those spoils And some of them which are considered charity are divided in certain ways. And this is what the Quran speaks about. Now, this comes during, these verses are revealed during the events of the Battle of Hunayn. And this battle, Hunayn, is also mentioned by name in the Quran. And the reason I want to speak a little bit about this battle and why these verses were revealed is because if you read the description, it's very telling of human nature. When human beings find themselves in a state of pride, and the Quran warns us against having pride, having being overly proud of ourselves, overly proud of our accomplishments, what we have done in the past. See, human beings, we have a tendency to stick to the past, whether it's good or whether it's bad. Some people, they live in the past. You know, they talk about what they did in college or what they did in high school, and for the next 30 or 40 years in life, they talk about what they did in college and what they did in high school. There's nothing beyond that. There's nothing about what they're doing now or the future. And some people, when something bad happens in their life, they live in the past. They're always perpetually living in the past. They never forget what has happened to them. The Quran here is warning the believers and saying, do not be proud of your accomplishments in the past. And this was very necessary when it came to addressing their preparation for the Battle of Hunain. Now, the Battle of Hunain, when and where did it take place? The Battle of Hunain took place after the conquest of Mecca, after Fatah Mecca, after the Prophet and the believers successfully, they were able to take back Mecca. And of course, the first year that the Muslims wanted to come from Medina to Mecca, they could not enter Mecca. They could not come in as people who were reclaiming the city. But they wrote a treaty with the non-Muslims. They went back to Medina and they came back the next year. When they came back the next year, they were able to conquer Mecca. When Mecca was conquered, there was a tribe which lived in an area outside of Mecca. This area is called At-Ta'if. And the Prophet had visited At-Ta'if before. At-Ta'if was known for being, you know, I guess it had better weather than Mecca. And there were orchards and vineyards and gardens. And at that time, At-Ta'if was the residents of At-Ta'if were a tribe by the name of Hawazin. And Hawazin were polytheists. So what did Hawazin do, this tribe? Once they heard that the Muslims took over Mecca, they began to mobilize. They began to mobilize an army. Because they were under the impression that this entire area in and around Mecca, and eventually the entire Arabian Peninsula was going to come under the control of the Muslims. So what did they do? They began to build themselves. They began to mobilize their armies. They began to prepare for battle. Now, what happened was they wanted to mobilize and then go into Mecca in order to undo what the Muslims had done. The Prophet found himself in a very difficult situation. Why? Because he has people from Medina with him who want to go back to Medina. These are residents. They want to go back to their families. They want to go back to their businesses, their livelihood. But now, before going back, they have to go towards Ta'if to fight off this group of 20,000, according to narrators, they say there were 20,000 people that were mobilized, Hawazin. Now the Prophet has to fight them, but not only does he have to fight them or face off with them, he has to take with him an army which is competent. An army which is competent, and you know, when you look at armies, and when you talk about, you know, their competence, it's not only in numbers and it's not only in weapons. I mean, if history tells us anything, if you look at the past, you know, few decades or few centuries, you find that numbers isn't always everything. One of the biggest things is morale when it comes to an army. There has to be good morale. There has to be good fighting spirit. So the Prophet was dealing with the Muslims who, of course, they had a huge morale booster, and that was what? That they had just conquered Mecca. They had just come back to Mecca. But in order to go back and face off with Hawazin, he had more numbers. He had to bring more numbers. So who did he bring in? He brought in the people of Mecca that were able to fight. But this posed a problem. Why? Because not all of the people of Mecca, you know, when the Prophet came in, they had to welcome the Prophet. Why? They had no other choice. There was nowhere else to go. They couldn't resist anymore. They fought against the Prophet a few wars and a few battles. But now when the Prophet came to Mecca, they had to surrender. They had to submit. And some of them didn't like that. When finally they cornered one of them, when they cornered Abu Sufyan, and the Prophet approached him, and he told him to say the proclamation, the Shahadatain, the two testaments. He said, bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and bear witness that I am the final messenger. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah. Very simple statement. So Abu Sufyan, coming from a staunch Arab pagan background, his reply was that the first testament I will accept. The second one is hard for me to swallow. But history records that he was a Muslim, and some say he became a great Muslim, so on and so forth. Some of them had not accepted Islam. So what happened? The Prophet took them with him to fight against Hawazin in the Battle of Hunayn. So the Prophet had an army of people who were very, very loyal, the ones that came from Medina, his family members, his Ahlul Bayt, his companions who stood by him in battle. And another portion of his army were people who had just accepted Islam, or were reluctantly had accepted Islam, or some people who had not even accepted Islam, but they wanted to fight against Hawazin because they wanted to protect Mecca. So the Prophet took them with him. Now the Quran says the following. It says in Surah At-Tawbah that remember the day of Hunayn, that you went there with a state of pride. You were very proud of yourself. Why? Because you had just accomplished something great. You had taken over Mecca. Finally, you had taken over Mecca, so now you're full of pride. You're full of this sense of, I've done something. I've done something great, and now nothing can stop me. Now, this type of mentality is very dangerous, as you can see. Because the Muslims had done this before. They won in the Battle of Badr early on, when they were only 313 people. And they fought an army of over 1,000 people. They were proud of themselves. They were great. What happened in the next battle? The Battle of Uhud. They lost. Because they lost focus of what was important. And they had their eye on, of course, without going into too much detail, the Battle of Uhud, they had their eye, some of them had their eye on the spoils of war. And so they abandoned their post. The Prophet had told them to stay on top of the mountain of Uhud. But they abandoned their posts, so when they left, the army came from behind and they clashed, and people thought the Prophet died. The Muslims lost that battle, the Battle of Uhud. Now, history was going to repeat itself again. The Muslims have conquered Mecca, and they're full of pride again. But what happens when they come to the Battle of Hunayn? Mixed emotions. Now they have an army facing off with them of 20,000 people. The Muslims were about 12,000 people, so a pretty formidable force. But they had to go to Ta'if, which was territory which they were unfamiliar with. If you've ever seen an army going to territory, they go to a country, and they're not familiar with the territory, most of the time that army loses when they want to fight against the natives in their own territory. It doesn't work. So that's what happened with the Muslims. The Prophet mobilized them, they went to meet against this army of 20,000. And this army of 20,000 was commanded by a young man who was 30 years old. So what did he do? He took out everyone. He took out the men and the women and the children and the cattle. All of them to fight against the Muslims. So what did he do? He placed the women and the children and then the cattle behind them. And then in front of the women and the children, he placed the men. And his logic was that this was going to encourage the men, because they know what is at stake if they're going to lose the battle. Their women and children are going to become captive, and their cattle is going to be taken away from them as spoils. And so he thought this was a good idea. So they went out and they clashed with the Muslims. The Muslims were about to... They were in very dangerous territory. So the Muslims were about to lose it. Some of them, they turned back. They began turning back. When they began turning back, the Prophet turned to Abdullah, his cousin, Abdullah ibn Abbas, and he told him, he said, say to the believers, call out to the believers, O people of the tree, what tree? The tree where they shook the hand of the Prophet, where they pledge allegiance. O people of the tree, where are you fleeing to? So once they heard that cry, they turned around. In the end, the Muslims won the battle. Now what happened when they won the battle? The women and children were taken captive. There were about 6,000 of them. And the cattle was all taken as spoils. Now in the end, the Prophet, of course, he freed the women and the children. But it's interesting because when the Prophet took those spoils, generally what takes place when an army loses is that they send out someone to negotiate, right? To negotiate the terms of agreement, the terms of settlement, whatever they call it. They didn't send anybody out. So the Prophet waited. Now the Prophet has his army. The Prophet has captives. The Prophet has spoils of war. And Hawazin, the tribe, have not sent anybody out. So the Prophet begins dividing the spoils of war. But what does he do when he divides the spoils of war? It's very, very interesting. And whether it was deliberate or not, whether it was by the command, these are questions that the companions began to ask. Why? Because they saw that the Prophet was granting the spoils of war to whom? Was he granting it to the people that came with him from Medina, who came to Mecca, who left their families and their homes and their businesses and their livelihood, came to conquer Mecca and then go back and then fight another army and then go back home? Did he give it to them? He didn't give it to them. Who did he begin giving the spoils of war to? The people of Mecca who had joined him in battle, who some of them had not even accepted Islam yet, or the ones that had accepted Islam were so and so. What does the Quran refer to these people as? And this is in Surah At-Tawbah. This is chapter number 9, verse 60. This is the revelation. The revelation says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, إِنَّمَا الصَّدَقَاتُ لِلْفُقَرَاءِ. That the sadaqat, that this charity that you're getting, لِلْفُقَرَاءِ, number one is for the poor. وَالْمَسَاكِينَ. And what's the difference between fuqara and masakin? Fuqara are the ones that are poor. Masakin are the ones who not only are they poor, but they don't possess anything. They have nothing. So sometimes a person can possess something. They can have a house and a car, but they're still considered faqir. That's why when we give zakat al-fitrah at the end of the month of Ramadan, who is deserving of zakat al-fitrah? Who is on the receiving end? Fuqara, people who are poor, not that they have nothing, they may have a home, they may have a car, they may have a livelihood. A faqir in jurisprudential terms is a person who does not have enough income coming in to fully support themselves and their family. That's what a faqir is. So maybe they have a salary, something coming in, an income, but it's not enough to sustain themselves. There has to be some sort of outside help coming in. That's the definition of a faqir. Masakin are the ones that, no, they're worse off than that. They have nothing. They have absolutely nothing. So it says, إِنَّمَا الصَّدَقَاتُ لِلْفُقَرَاءِ وَالْمَسَاكِينَ. There's eight categories. وَالْعَامِلِينَ عَلَيْهَا. What is الْعَامِلِينَ عَلَيْهَا? The ones who gather those funds. The ones who go out and gather those funds. وَالْعَامِلِينَ عَلَيْهَا. This is the third. وَالْمُؤَلَّفَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ. المُؤَلَّفَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ means what? Those who, their hearts need to be reconciled. Meaning that they've accepted the faith, but they're sort of, you know, they don't really know where they are. They're sort of questioning themselves. They're not fully committed, for whatever reason it is. This is the group that joined the Prophet from Mecca and came to the Battle of Hunayn, Hawazin. They are referred to as al-mu'allafati qulubuhum. So they accepted Islam, but there's some reluctance. When Abu Sufyan accepted Islam, was it completely, wholeheartedly, he wanted to accept Islam? Or was it with reluctance? It was with reluctance. Not only him, but his tribe. The people that were with him. The Meccan elders. Why? Why reluctance? Because accepting Islam meant that you had to be fair, you had to be just, you had to be equal, there was no favoritism. Everybody was considered your brother and sister, and that didn't really sit well with them. So because it didn't sit well, they were very reluctant. And the Quran refers to these people as al-mu'allafati qulubuhum, the ones who their hearts need to be reconciled. How do you reconcile their hearts? The Prophet took the spoils of war and he gave it to them. He started giving them materials, because he knew that they were not at a level of faith where they can stand alone by themselves. That they needed some sort of incentive. You know, sometimes you have to you have to give a child an incentive. You tell him, you know, if you do good in school, if you get good grades, then, you know, I'll buy you something. I'll buy you a banana, whatever. Or something that they have their eye on, something of value. You know, this is because that the child, if you leave him alone, he or she doesn't really care about getting good grades or not, because they don't know what's going to come out of it, or whatever. Their mind is somewhere else. Their heart is not in it. So you need to reconcile their hearts by giving them something, a material, which is not evil. This isn't bribing. You know, some people, they mix bribes with incentives. And I'll tell you something. When we talk about bribe, the type of bribe which is not allowed in Islam, if you go back to the books of jurisprudence, halal and haram, if you go back to the books of fiqh, the type of bribe which is not accepted, which is not allowed, is when somebody, if you give somebody a bribe to judge in your favor, such as a judge, when you come to a judge, and you give them something to judge in your favor, that's referred to as rashwa, that's referred to as bribe, and that's not allowed. Sometimes you give somebody an incentive to do something. It's not a bribe, it's an incentive. Okay? Please follow the rules. Don't take it from me and going out giving, you know, incentives to everyone to do things for you. Please exercise good judgment. But I'll give you an example. If you go to some countries around the world, if you don't give the person something sweet, then your entire life is on pause. There's nothing that you can do. There has to be something sweet in the deal. You know what I'm talking about. This is not necessarily forbidden. This is simply an incentive, because the person's heart is not in it. They don't want to do it out of their kindness of their heart. And that's very, very important, that when someone does something, that they do it from the kindness of their hearts. طيب النفس, this is what we call. There's a hadith that says that the mal, the property or the belongings of a Muslim is not allowed for you to take unless it is offered from طيب النفس, from the kindness of his heart. So if it's taken, you know, without the kindness of his heart, without, meaning it's not voluntary from him, then beware of that. Another saying, it says, المأخوذ حياء كالمأخوذ غصبا, that if you take something, if you put someone in a difficult position, and out of that person's haya, you know, they're embarrassed not to give, they give it because they are embarrassed not to give, and not from the wholeness of their heart, it is as if you are usurping that thing from them. It is as if it is ghasb, right? Because some people, they simply will not refuse, they will not say no. So the hadith is saying, don't insist on a person who you know is not going to refuse. Al-mu'allafatu qulubuhum, the people who their hearts need reconciliation, these are the people that the Prophet began giving the spoils of war to. So he gave to Abu Sufyan. When Abu Sufyan received, and the Prophet was giving them very generously, I mean, the portions that he was giving was 100 camels and 200 camels to each person. So he gave 100 camels to Abu Sufyan. Abu Sufyan says, I have two sons. Abu Sufyan had two sons, Yazid and Muawiyah. He said, what about them? The Prophet gave. The Prophet did not refuse. The Prophet gave each one 100. Other people came. The Prophet also gave them. There were a few Meccan tribal elders, Suhail ibn Amr, Safwan ibn Umayyah. These were the Meccan elders that refused to accept Islam before, that fought against the Prophet, but now they were with the Prophet. But they had accepted Islam, but they weren't there wholehearted. And so the Prophet had to give them incentive. See, the Prophet understood, as a leader, he was very wise. He understood that some people, he knew that their hearts were there. Their hearts were in. And they were there till the end. That no matter what happened, they were going to stick by the side of the Prophet. And he had tested these people time and time again. Again, the Battle of Hunayn takes place a few years before the Prophet passes away. Before that, there were a number of battles. There were a number of situations which took place where it was proven to the Prophet that his close circle, his family members, his Ahlul Bayt, and his close companions, regardless of what would happen, they were going to stick by his side. And that's why when it came to giving bonuses, when it came to giving incentives, in this particular case, he wanted to test them. So what did he do? And this was all, of course, by the command of God. He gave to the ones who their hearts were sort of weak and they needed to be reconciled. But he didn't give to the people that came with him from Medina. Now imagine, you're in this situation where you're with the Prophet and you come to Mecca, you leave your livelihood, your family, everything, conquer Mecca, and now instead of going back, you have to fight a battle. You almost lose the battle, but you win by the grace of God. You get a whole lot of spoils of war, but you don't get anything from those spoils of war. While the people that were only a few months ago fighting against the Prophet, they get 100 camels and 200 camels and 300 camels. Imagine that situation. Very, very tough for the believers, right? But the believers were patient until they got together and they said, you know, we have to say something. The Prophet has sort of overlooked us, and you know, by being with the Prophet, we're losing business and whatever. So they go to the Prophet. One of the representatives, Sa'd ibn Ubadah, who was one of the leaders of the Ansar. The Ansar are the ones that lived in Medina that accepted the Prophet. So he went to the Prophet. He said, Ya Rasulullah, you know, what's going on here? That we've been with you, and now when it comes time to divide the spoils of war, you're giving favor to Mr. X and Mr. Y and Mr. Z, but you're overlooking us. What's going on? So the Prophet turned to Sa'd, and he said, I want you to gather all of the Ansar, all of the people that came from Medina to Mecca. I want you to gather them, and we'll meet. I'll meet you at a certain time, at a certain place. So they gather, and the Prophet comes to them, and he tells them, O people, I have heard that some of you are not content with my decision of how I distributed the spoils of war. That I gave the people of Mecca, whose hearts need to be reconciled, I gave them more and I didn't give you anything. He told them, O people of Medina, O Ansar. He told them, was it not enough that I came to Medina and I saw you fighting amongst one another and you were in a bloody civil war and you were fighting each other for so long that you had forgotten why you were fighting each other in the first place? Because they had this mentality when the Prophet came to Medina, the two warring tribes, Al-Aws and Al-Khazraj, these were the two tribes. They had gotten into this blood feud where they would just randomly attack one another and kill from one another's tribe. And this had lasted so long that they had forgotten why they were doing it in the first place. He said, didn't I find you in this state and I made peace between you? And on top of that, not only did I make peace, did I stop the fighting between you, I made you brothers of one another. I brought you hand in hand, and I made you brothers of one another. Didn't I do that? Didn't I bring you guidance when you wanted guidance, and you called upon me when I was in Mecca, you wanted guidance, and I responded, and I came to you? And these were very, very good believers. So when they heard about this, they took back their earlier statements, and they began to realize the importance of the Prophet. That no, what he's saying is true, it's legitimate. That we were fighting one another and this man came and he brought us Islam and he brought us civilization and he brought us peace, and now we're thinking about material goods. He gave us something which is far greater in value than material goods, than any material goods. The Prophet didn't stop there. The Prophet, he gave them a while for this to sink in, for this realization to sink in. And then what he said next showed their true loyalty. He told them, after a while, he said that, what are you going to answer? Do you have anything to say? Do you have anything to reply to what I said? They said, no, Ya Rasulullah. There's nothing that we can say. You said it well, that we were fighting amongst ourselves and you brought peace and reconciliation and all of this and you did us a favor. He said, that's not the full truth. He said, one thing that you can reply, this is what the Prophet is telling them. He says, you can reply to me. You can say that in the same way that you brought us peace, we also gave you safe haven when you were running away from your own tribe who had fought against you. And they had plotted to assassinate you, we gave you safe haven. When you could not find safe haven anywhere else, you came to us and we saved your life. So the Prophet is telling them how to reply to him. So what is the Prophet doing here? The Prophet is showing them, he takes it one step further. He says that in the same way I have favors upon you, you have favors upon me. You know, sometimes when you have a special relationship with someone and the relationship is to the extent where materials don't really matter anymore. Where you say, you know, if you know, you borrow money from one another or something like that, it doesn't really make that much of a difference because there's a very special bond, there's a special relationship between you and that person. The Prophet is saying that there's such a special relationship between myself and you guys that no material, nothing at all can come in between us. And so at that moment they began to weep, all of them, they began to weep. And they said, yes, Ya Rasulullah, you taught us a very valuable lesson here. He said that your hearts are not like the hearts of these people. Your hearts do not require reconciliation. You accepted me when I had nothing to bring, when I had no materials or anything like that. And so they came to this very great realization. And that's what the Qur'an is saying here. The Qur'an is saying here that there are some people that, you know, in order for there to be an actual commitment, sometimes you have to give them some sort of incentive. You have to give them some sort of bonus. And that's why the Qur'an talks about heaven and hell. That for those who do good, there is heaven waiting. You go there and you have a castle, and you have an all-you-can-eat buffet, and you have beautiful people, and you have streams of wine, and so on and so forth. Why? Why does the Qur'an describe the paradise in this way? Often, frequently. It's because we're driven by materials. In this world, we're materialistic people. We are driven by materials. And at the same time, the Qur'an tells us of the hellfire, that if you don't do it, well, there is also a negative connotation. And that's why in the hadith, which is attributed, I believe, to Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, he says that, my Lord, I did not worship you, and it might be included in a dua as well, that I did not worship you because I wanted your paradise. Because I wanted paradise. That's not the reason why I worship you. And I didn't worship you because I was afraid of the hellfire. I worship you because you're worthy of worship. Whether there's paradise or hellfire is very irrelevant. You are my creator, you are my sustainer. You are the one that has sustained me, so you are very worthy of worship. There's another hadith, and I'll end with this. And you know, this is taken from the words of Amir al-Mu'mineen, that there are two types of iman. There's two types of belief. Because not everybody who says, I'm a believer, is on the same level. And the Qur'an says this, that people are on different levels of belief. Some people are at the lowest level of belief. They're believers, but they're at the lowest level of belief. And some people, no matter the situation, no matter whether there is materials involved, no matter whether there is reward or punishment involved or not involved, that they're very stable. They're very stable in their belief. And this is why Imam Ali alayhi salam, there's a hadith which is attributed to him, where he says that, if the veil was to be lifted from in front of my eyes, that my yaqeen, my conviction, would not raise. لَوْ كُشِفَ لِيَ الْغِطَاءَ مَزْدَدْتُ يَقِينًا. Doesn't matter if the veil was lifted in front of me, if I was able to see God with my eyes, if I was able to see everything with my eyes, it would not increase, not even a bit in my certainty. That's how much certainty I have. That I'm not driven by punishment or reward or materials. That's how much love I have for God. Because God is worthy of worship. And that's the type of iman that we refer to as iman mustaqar. It's something which is stable. It's something which is deeply rooted. Versus another type of iman, which is referred to as iman mustawda. What does mustawda mean? Mustawda comes from wadi'a. Mustawda is something which is borrowed. Something which is borrowed. Something which is temporary. When you give someone something to borrow, you give someone a book to borrow for a week. It's temporary. Some people have iman, but it's mustawda. It's like someone has lended them faith. It's temporary. It doesn't belong to them. And then there are people who, no matter what the circumstances, they are strong in faith. And that's why the Quran says to the Prophet in this instance, those people that you find that are materialistically driven, give them some materials. If the outcome is good, then give them some materials. But some people, you don't need to give them any materials. They will follow you no matter what. They recognize the greatness in you. And those are your true followers. Those are your great followers. Whether times are good or whether times are bad, whether they have money in their pocket or they don't have money in their pocket, they will follow you regardless. So we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to allow us in this month to be among those who have a strong and solid faith, inshallah. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to not allow anything to bring our faith down or to shake our faith. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma aghfir lil-mu'minin wal-mu'minat wal-muslimin wal-muslimat al-ahya'i minhum wal-amwat. Tabi' baynana wa baynahum bil-khayrat. Innaka mujibu al-da'awat. Innaka qadhi al-hajat. Innaka ala kulli shay'in qadir. برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين وصلى الله وسلم على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين